from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
And here we are. This is the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. As always, I am Alon.
And I am Ara, and I am lepeeved.
About?
I was browsing today. Browsing the internet.
Okay. Not at the shopping malls.
No. And I come across this blog. And the title of the blog, well, this blog post, the title is, "When Will Video Games Grow Up?" And after I breathe a minute-long sigh, I think to myself, this is like saying, when will video games stop beating your wife?
Well, I have that question every day.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not yet married.
So, I mean, when are people going to stop asking that question? There's absolutely nothing.
Well, that's just a headline. What was he really asking?
Well, it was hard to tell exactly what it was about, but it was something to do with, a lot of video games today are too exclusive and they exclude too many people. And we need to make more games that include more people, specifically, right, the ones that, they're quote, casual gamers, right, i.e. the ones who don't care about playing games.
Can you tell me who the author and the audience are?
It was just some blog post on some site. It wasn't, I don't remember the guy's name. It wasn't like...
But it wasn't like a
high
specific
profile anything.
Speech to a very specific set of
no,
people.
No, I mean, it was kind of just one of those like whimsical posts, so it's really hard to dig into it too much because the guy probably spent about 18 minutes thinking about the whole thing, but... it's just stuff like that. It's vexing. I will tell you, it vexes me.
It doesn't vex me that much.
It vexes me because it's just, I don't know.
The author has one idea he wants to express, and he finds a way to express it.
Right. But this idea, right? Well, one of them is that, like, I mean, like, when are we gonna stop saying that like video games are this immature thing that has to grow up and like. If we could only just figure out a way for it to become mature, then everything would be better, right? It's just one of those taglines that has been rephrased again and again and again, and people just keep saying it because they're so used to hearing it, right?
Well, it seems to me that maturity would actually be the opposite of he was trying to
yes,
say, right?
Exactly.
Which is where it's not exclusive.
So that's a bit ironic, right? Because there's that part of it, right?
And as it matures, it would cater to a more specific audience.
No, I mean, the phrase itself actually, like in reality, doesn't have a lot to do with the content of that post. But with regards to the content, you know, yeah, it's like, there are some attitudes out there. There are some people who believe that, you know, yes, you know, like every video game should... and maybe they don't think explicitly this way. Maybe they just think, yes, video games should be more inclusive of all people, and we should be, you know, it's more mass market, and you know, that's fine if you're the guy who's the bean counter and wants to sell to as many people as possible, right? But there's just so many things that you miss out on that have so much value when you take that kind of attitude. You know, some of the greatest things in the world have not been accessible to even the majority of the population. You know, and to kind of espouse a philosophy where games are, and it applies to any media you want, really. Any media, you know, if you make it, you can't have all of it for the masses, you know? That you lose out on so much that's so important, you know? Yeah, some games are nice to be, you know, enjoyed by everybody. And then there's other types of games, just as there's other types of music, just as there's other types of books, and so on, that, you know, they have niche crowds that they appeal to. There are smaller groups of people who can even understand them and appreciate them, and yet they're incredibly, incredibly important, right? And I think, I mean, we shouldn't lose out on these things. These are important things. Everything has a place, and those things definitely have a place. And I'm just sick and tired of hearing about just this constant beating of this drum of, like, more mass market, more mass market, more mass market. That seems to just be coming out of, you know, a lot of the media's ears.
It certainly seems to me that the idea of mass market would apply to only I don't want to say only a certain group, right? And obviously we all think we when we think stuff like that, right? Because that's the current player in the appeal to everyone market, right?
Well, I mean, I guess if you could characterize one video game console that way, it would be the Wii, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly seems to be the goal, right? Like, that was Nintendo's intention with the whole console, was expand audience, right? You want younger people playing, you want older people playing, you want a wider audience, meaning more women and more family members who didn't used to play. Given that that was sort of the plan, what's the word I'm looking for? Anyway, it was the plan from the beginning with the Wii. And so that's why I would say that. But still, I mean, it's not like you can't make a mature game on the Wii or some, by mature, I mean, you know, mature rated, right? You can't make a game that's targeted to a specific audience, or it's not that you can't.
Right. Well, it's funny, right? Because there's different senses of maturity. And I think that this sense of maturity is just meaning, from what I can gather, why aren't video games the way I want them to be?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, so that's just a bad author. And you're pointing to this piece of paper over there with a pie chart on it. Does that relate to what you're talking about?
Completely not.
Totally different thing.
But we can talk about that too.
Well, okay. Yeah, I mean, let's not waste time on a bad blog author.
Okay, so
clearly his mind was not, he wasn't thinking properly, or he would have had an idea that was perhaps a little bit more accurate.
Well, hey, you know, 90% of everything is crap, so.
Possibly more.
Possibly more.
But since I didn't read the article, I think that's why everything I've said has been drivel so far. And it's not that I don't realize that. I want our listeners to recognize that. So let's talk about something I do know about. What is this?
All right.
What is this chart that I'm looking at?
So I have this chart in front of me, and I brought this in so I could talk about a larger issue than what this chart's talking about. But the chart itself is talking about MMO game revenues in the USA, right? So revenues that have been collected total, right, of all MMOs in the US, totals, guess how much?
Well, what's funny here is that I introed this as something I do know something about.
Right,
and I know nothing about MMOs.
Right, no. But I think you'll see the angle I'm going with this, and
okay.
You know something about.
I'm going
the angle
to guess a lot.
Yes. Okay. So the a lot for us equals 3.8 billion.
I was going to question if it approached $1 billion.
Billion, right?
I figured it must.
Now here's the interesting part, right? The graph has a lot of. We've got this pie chart here. And
you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see the total number of WoW players at any given time, the total number of subscriptions, paid subscriptions to WoW over time, and like when it peaked, and certain times of the year when it peaks, right? So
yeah.
Maybe over the summer it might get higher.
So
or
that's interesting,
whatever.
Too. This data, by the way, is published on www.todaysgamers.com. But we don't know how many WoW players there are, but they do say that there are 46 million MMO gamers in the U.S. So probably 40 million are WoW players.
Yeah. Well, what I don't like about that is that it assumes every... I'm guessing what it's doing is really measuring subscriptions people who have created a logon,
right,
and not necessarily active players or paying players, or if one player has a subscription in multiple areas, is he counted as an individual each time?
Right. Well, yeah, now you get into all those gray areas, but the magic word you said was subscriptions, and that's what I really want to talk about,
yeah.
Right?
All that really matters is who's paying and how many times are they paying.
Now, they break down this $3.8 billion into a lot of different categories. And the largest one, by far, by, let's say, wow, it's at least like 20-30%. It's basically half the pie chart is monthly subscriptions, $1.8 billion, right? Everything else
is this measuring a monthly or annual revenue?
It's just people who pay for their MMO monthly, okay?
Okay.
Now, on the other side of the chart, they got a bunch of stuff, which all of which is just single-time purchases, except for annual subscriptions, right? So the monthly subscriptions are about 50%, give or take a few percent. Annual subscriptions are about 15%. Everything else is stuff that you buy once at a time, right?
So within the game.
Right. Like, I pay for this, and then I just pay for it once, right?
I mean, there's also, like, you have to buy WoW initially. You have to buy the, you know,
right,
the box.
Right. And that's included in here. But here's the fascinating thing, right? Which is actually obvious if you really think about it. Now, for MMOs, and I think this applies to non-MMOs just as well, and this is what I really want to talk about, the amount of money that they're raking in from monthly subscriptions just eclipses anything else they could possibly make by one-time purchases.
Yeah, that's definitely obvious.
Right, and if you think about it, right, on the non-MMO side, right, like, where else do we have monthly subscriptions? We have, like, Xbox Live, right? Like, maybe the OnLive thing, if that takes off, right? Maybe Gamefly, right? You pay for that monthly, don't you?
There used to be the game Sega's Game Channel.
Right. So these kinds of things. And if you think about how you spend your money in your life, right? Now, I'm really frugal with how I spend my money, right? So I hate paying for services that I have to pay for on a monthly basis because they totally rip me off, right? TV. Like, some people are paying like $100 for TV per month. That's $1,200 a year.
You and me both. I like something physical that
maybe
I can resell,
more, right?
That I have rights to.
Right. Cell phone, okay, crap, overpriced. You're paying, you know, probably about half that amount per year. Or, I mean, if you're doing it on the cheap, right? I mean, you could pay easily $100 a month on cell phone, can't you?
Yeah. Well, these days they're making it hard to exceed 100 just because they say you get everything
right
for $100.
And I think that's just because they're making so much money off you, right?
Oh yeah.
Now, consider it now framed in this light, right? So think about how much money that you actually spend per year on just single time purchases, whether it's digital stuff or retail stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And I bet you that the amount that you pay for monthly services just completely eclipses that too, right? Just regardless of whether it's video game related or un-video game related, right?
Okay.
So this is really scary to me because I think with the phenomenon
scary
here,
to you that we're moving to a subscription model?
Well, in a way, yes. It's scary because the profit on subscription-based models, in particular, right, monthly subscription models is just astronomical.
Well, it depends what you're paying for, right? Like, I'm not one to pay for something when I don't get to keep it eternally.
Sure.
Right. But sure. I've also thought many times that, you know, let's say I were someone who wants to listen to a lot of music, and I actually am not, but there are certainly those people who are. Getting one of those subscriptions where you pay $10, $15, or $20 a month for unlimited music,
right,
totally makes sense. Really does, because you have access to everything. Now, if they did that something like that with games, where you pay $20, $30, $50 a month, and you just have access to a huge selection of games, and, you know, in a future world, all the new games that come out,
right,
that would totally make sense. And something like Gamefly.
Right, and I think that if you did that, you would pay more per year on game product than you would if you had to purchase them individually.
That's true. However, I think I would also play more.
Well, because you paid for it.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
And we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio, and we're talking about subscription-based gaming.
Really, the conversation is about subscription-based anything.
Yeah, but gaming.
For instance, a lot of you might be thinking, I want to subscribe to a 4-year education. Or 3 years.
Or maybe even less.
Or you could get your associate's degree. These are the sorts of things you could do, I think again associates, I'm not even sure, at UAT.edu, the University of Advancing Technology. So check them out, UAT.edu, they'll teach you the stuffs and how to get into the gaming industry.
Very deftly done, sir.
Thank you very much. So what you were saying, and what I can't wholly agree with, is that when there's a subscription option in some arena, whether it be, you know, a phone device or gaming or
right,
more movies or something, you will inevitably pay more on an annual level or some long-term measurement of time.
Now, obviously, I'm not going to talk in absolutes here, right? Certainly, there will be the deal in some media arena where it's actually a great deal. But I think by and large, the vast majority of these things are terrible deals for the consumer, and they're set up in such a way so that the way most people handle money, they don't even notice.
So here's the thing, though. This is from your viewpoint and from mine, which is very similar to yours, because we're both very frugal people. And we're also to the point where, like, we're old enough that we have enough going on in our lives where we don't have enough free time to really take advantage, or that's not what I'm trying to say. We don't have enough free time where, given the money we have now and the ability to purchase lots of games, it's interesting because we don't have the time to actually use that money to buy the games that we would like to play.
Right. And of course, the subscription type of service that you pay for, the deal worthiness of it certainly goes down the less time you actually spend with it.
Of course.
For sure.
And that's true of any subscription model, right?
Totally.
The less time you have, the less you can take advantage of this thing that you're paying for, whether or not you use.
Yep.
and so as adults, there's going to be less value there. And yes, what you're saying is we're going to end up spending more money on something. But then again, there's many of our listeners and many of our friends even who do buy far more games than we do. People who are less frugal or just, you know, more interested in the hobby or more curious about what's out there, or perhaps less picky, right, about their entertainment. Because you and I have really high standards about the games that we're gonna pay for.
It's a nice way to put it.
I think so, at least for us.
Sure.
They buy a lot of games. For instance, I told you about that guy who buys two copies of the games.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. That guy's an outlier, though, no matter how you cut it.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of the people listening to this, by virtue of the fact that they're listening, are, you know, relatively hardcore gamers, and they probably buy more games than we do, personally. And for those people, the subscription model where you actually have access to the types of games that we would be buying normally may convert to a much greater value proposition for them.
And certainly, like, I agree that there's definitely some people that applies to, and that
but I think it's a lot more than you think.
Well, what I think is that there's way more. Like, I'm not going to pull out a number out of my butt, but I think it's clear that there's way more money being made by companies who are providing subscription-based services in general, especially when it has to do with video games. And this chart here only supports this argument. And I think it's indicative, really, of just the spending and money handling habits of most Americans. If you think about it, right? When you go buy a car, right? I mean, most people don't even understand that they're not haggling for the price. Most people don't even understand that the salesman is successfully getting them to commit to a monthly payment with a indefinite or unspecified term, right? So they screw you. They screw you by saying, oh, how much do you want to pay a month? Oh, I can afford $100 a month. Like, okay, we'll just change the number of months that you're paying that for until we make a profit.
Yeah, well, no, I see what you're saying, but the thing is, so subscription model, and a lot of things have converted to subscription because what we're getting here, we're paying for a service rather than a good. And so, like, if we look back to print media where there's a subscription, a magazine subscription, where you get one sent to your door, there's not a whole lot of profit on that. And actually, the profit from magazines comes solely from the advertising that's in the magazine.
Yeah, I would say magazines are probably one of the areas of subscription where it's they're not totally raping you.
Yeah. No, and I would say this. The thing is, I would convert that to anything where you're paying a subscription and getting a physical good,
right?
Not just magazines.
Right.
So what we're saying is, for the subscription model where they are totally screwing you usually, is when it's a subscription to an intangible service.
To give you the right to access something, right?
So you're accessing cellular technology, right? What bugs me about that is all of the money we're paying is going towards advertising. I would love, like, one of the relatively progressive companies, and I'm going to say Sprint only because of their cool CEO commercials. I have no idea what their company is actually like, other than the fact that they never bill you properly. allegedly. That's one user's opinion. I would love for them to say, you know what, guys? In June, we're not going to advertise. You will not hear anything from us on the radio. You will not see anything from us on TV, on all of the Heroes episodes. No product placement that we have to pay for, none of that. And every one of our users is going to get a half their bill this month. Whatever their bill is, it's going to be 50%.
Yeah, once a long time ago, I think State Farm did that to me. Not with the advertising bit, but with the, here's some money back that you paid for insurance. Oh. I was like, great. And they're just like, yeah, you know, it wasn't as expensive for us as we thought, so we'll give you some money back. I was like, all right, that's fantastic.
I actually got a letter 2 days ago from, like, my electric company or something saying, hey, sorry, we just found out our bills for February were all over whatever, so you're going to get some money back. All right, that's cool.
Things like this make me believe that there is a purpose to life.
Okay. Well, so it bugs me that we just pay for their advertising, which is overblown because there's so much competition or whatever. But that's a totally separate point. So when we're paying for a subscription service, not a subscription good, then yeah, they're totally screwing you usually. But in the game space, like there's so much variability or variance because are you getting access to just demos freely? Are you getting access to just casual games? Are you getting access to just indie games? Are you getting access to one publisher's titles? How are you going to receive that? And so it would be interesting if Xbox Live just charged you a monthly fee. It'd surely be a lot greater than the $6 or $7 that they charge you if you pay monthly now.
Well,
and just said, you have access to all of our games, period. You can download all of them. You can play all of them. As long as you have the service,
You
can access these games. And as soon as you disable the service, you can't get access to any of your games anymore.
Right. Well, the way I think it's set up now, like I really think that they're overcharging. And I think that most people aren't bothered by that.
Overcharging for their annual just
for their monthly gold service, right? Mm-hmm. Or even annual, because and this is just the personal thing, right? I mean, I'm sure it's totally worth it for the kid who plays 60 hours a week online, right? But I'm online very, very let's just say randomly, right? So I might play a whole bunch in a couple of weeks and then I don't touch it for 3 months, right? So when I actually bought a subscription last year. I bought a one-year subscription because they were on sale on Amazon. It was like a super cheap price. So I was like, okay, I'll get it. And I must have played like probably less than 20 times.
Yeah.
Actually used the gold account less than 20 times in 12 months.
I'm with you, man. I'm the same way. But like, what bugs me about that is that, you know, if you're playing on a Windows machine, not an Xbox, you don't pay anything for the same service. Like, you can access stuff. You can download demos. Of course, when you're downloading demos, they're not all coming through Microsoft servers, right? When you're playing your games online, they're not all going through Microsoft servers. So they do definitely take on cost, and they have personnel that have to handle that. And I can understand the costs. But the thing is, that's made up through their other profit centers. When you're, you know, renting movies and you're paying for the games that you download through the Xbox Live service, all that stuff.
Right.
They're profiting from, and it could go to pay for the service. But who knows if it could pay for it?
So my hypothesis is that, you know, Microsoft won't tell you how much money they're making off of Live, but I think they're raking it in like crazy.
Oh, totally. I mean, think of how many millions of users they have, and they're all paying at least $50 a year.
Yeah.
Right, or 60. I mean, I guess since I bought a $35 subscription through Amazon as well, they probably sold that to Amazon for less than $35.
And that's on top of all of the individual pay-per-purchase things that you can buy.
Well, exactly. You know? Right. So, but just the subscriptions, the fact is that it's only there because there's no competition in the market. And if there were...
Yep.
If people actually wanted to use the PS3 and liked the live-like service that the PSN doesn't actually bring right now...
Right.
And Sony offered that for free, Microsoft would immediately drop that price to either free or very, very little. Comparatively, at least to what it is now. Anyway, not quite sure how we got on this topic, but last week we promised we would talk about 5 creepy ways that video game people keep you addicted to video games, and we're going to talk about that when we get back.
Hello, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
And we're back. We're going to talk about, like I said, last week, I mentioned this amazing article, which the more I read, the more I'm happy that this article exists. And I think I actually want to print this out like in a more official format and just keep it forever as some sort of like thing.
Laminate it, frame it.
I don't know about that, but just show anybody who shows an interest in games like, hey, just read this. And it's good. Like, I think everyone would benefit from some education in psychology. And
agreed.
Like, this is a very compacted, interesting form of psych education. And, well, that's one reason I like it so much. So if you missed last week or you just forgot, the article is called Five Creepy Ways Video Games Are Trying to Get You Addicted. And I can't take credit for discovering this. It was all Ara. You brought it to my attention from Cracked.com, written by David Wong, who must be at least a somewhat intelligent person, given what he wrote here. And so there are these, obviously, five things listed in it. So let's start off with number one and just explain what a Skinner box is. Do you want to do that, Ara?
So, okay, so I'm just going to go off of my memory. So maybe I'm right and maybe I won't be, but hopefully I'll be just right.
Well, I'll start you up. Here it said number five, putting you in a Skinner box. This right. is one creepy way that video games are trying to keep us addicted.
Right. So there's this really famous psychologist named Skinner, right? And so what Skinner box is, or at least I seem to remember it is basically, you know, there's inputs and there's outputs, right? And so you don't – when you study psychology, there's one way to study it, and you can study it in terms of inputs and outputs, right? And you have this – you can call it the black box, right? And if you – change the way certain inputs are given to the subject, i.e. the human playing the game, then you observe certain outputs, right? And it's a very, very kind of, I don't know, a reductionist way of looking at things, I guess, right? We want to, if you look at it in video game terms, right, you can think of it as, okay, we want the player to do this, right? This is our desired behavior of the player for whatever purpose. 99% of the time it's to give us more money. So we will change the inputs until we learn something about how those inputs change the outputs, and then we will eventually arrive at the ideal set of inputs to give us the output we want. And it's a very clinical way of saying, yeah, this is how we approach, right, figuring out ways to get more money from you.
So unfortunately, your explanation there got a little bit confusing. So I'm going to try and simplify a little bit. Skinner box is a box, a literal box, where there's a rat, and he presses a button, and when he presses a button, he gets food, right? For a little pellet drop.
See,
or something.
This is why you can't rely on me to remember things.
I'm just saying, I mean, sure, you gave good information, but just to simplify for the listeners, Skinner box, dude Skinner made a box, put a rat in it, rat presses the button, he gets food. And rat learns that when he presses the button, he gets the food. And so we say desired behavior is rat pressing a button. So what Skinner learned is that if you don't give him food every time he presses the button, but you do give him food randomly when pressing the button, so once after three presses, once after five presses, once after one press, and that just changes with no discernible pattern, the rat will smash the hell out of the button.
So that was completely not my explanation at all. So, but that's cool too.
Inputs, outputs, whatever.
So I didn't describe the Skinner box whatsoever, but it's still related to what we're talking about.
Sure. So a lot of what we're saying will actually lead into discussion of MMOs. So it's probably a good thing we talked about it earlier.
Yeah.
With the subscription model.
Well, the takeaway from that is that God, I hate that word. Why do I say that?
The takeaway?
Oh, it's so corporate. It's so.
No, that's a good one.
Synergizing and okay. So and monetizing. Okay. So right. You can notice this even in your own behavior if you're observant enough. You know, if let's say there's some video game where there's an enemy who drops items when you kill them, right? So if they drop,
think Diablo.
Oh yeah, Diablo.
Or World of Warcraft is a
World of
example.
Warcraft. Lots and lots of games do this. I mean, like the idea of enemy drops, almost universal.
Okay.
So if you always got the same thing every time you killed the enemy, right? Every time you encountered them. Okay, so you know, okay, when I do this, I get this. Like, okay. But the interesting thing psychologically, right, which you just described, I'm now saying it in in video game terms, is that if that item doesn't appear consistently, if it appears randomly, right, what happens is your part of your brain that's not the necessarily the conscious, self-knowing part, tries to figure out some kind of pattern in this exchange that you're having, right? And this is actually what people do if you really think about it. We're kind of like pattern matching machines. I'm getting a little existential here, but your brain wants to try and figure out, when I get this, right, what's causing me to get it? You're actually, it sounds counterintuitive, but you're actually more motivated to kill this enemy repeatedly if it drops at a random rate than if it did at a consistent rate, right, regardless of what that is, right? Now, right, you can even take that a step further, right, and this is what a lot of games do. Like we mentioned last week, John Blow of Braid and some other people think that this is actually immoral to do this, right? Well, we could give the enemy a common item to drop, let's say 95% of the time, and a rare item to drop 5% of the time, and let's say that also every once in a while, or maybe more often than not, it just doesn't drop anything, right? So let's say like 50% of the time doesn't drop anything, 45% of the time he'll drop the common item, and 5% of the time he'll drop the rare item, right? So now this gets you even more pumped and even more motivated to basically grind on this enemy repeatedly, because the rare item is really, really rare. There's no real pattern, but your brain gets caught in the cycle of trying to figure out a pattern that doesn't exist. And because it doesn't exist, it never figures it out. And so you're almost like in this infinite loop of obsessively trying to get that rare item and just doing the same thing over and over and over and over again until you get it. And when you finally get that rare item, right, it's like, right? Like,
Yeah.
Really,
what's funny
really,
to me
really,
is like,
really satisfying.
So we're conscious of this, and you're a game designer, and the last game that we sat down and, like you said, hey, you should play this game,
right,
was that crazy Demon's Souls game.
Yeah, and they have that type of system in Demon's Souls, unfortunately.
Yeah, they drop things. But beyond that,
yeah,
you chose the character with the greatest luck value. And
yes,
luck is the characteristic that determines how often, cool things will drop.
Right, right.
And so you actually play to this very characteristic.
Right, right.
Personally.
Well, there was in fact a pattern in that system, which is, if you increase this attribute, right, then the rate of drops will just increase anyway, right? So
maybe you're reducing the variability there. I don't know.
Right. For myself playing the game in that instance, yes. But this is, I've got caught up in this repeatedly, right? Every time I play Disgaea, right, and by every time I mean like I played the first one, I played the second one, I played the third one, like 100 plus hours each time, right? What motivated me to keep going in those games, as much as I hate to say it, as silly as it is this exact phenomenon. And I'm really getting sick of it. And the funny thing is I remember the very point where I stopped playing the third one, and that was the moment that I realized that all of this character leveling up, all of these items, all of these things that I was collecting over time, right, I realized the point where I would not see any really new or interesting assets in the game anymore, right? Like, I'd killed all the bosses that I cared about. The bosses that were left over, right, I decided that there wasn't enough novelty in the experience to actually try and build my characters up to reach them. And the same thing for, the rarest of the rare items that I didn't end up collecting, right? There got to a point where I was just like, it's almost like I woke up. It's like, hey, wait a minute. Why am I grinding all this, right? What am I doing this for? Now, a lot of times, normally, right? When I say normally, I mean like maybe in previous games, like Final Fantasy games, right? You do it to see the next chunk of story, let's say, right? And then so there's at least some justification for spending all that time grinding to get more story, right? And it's like we've been trained to do this so much that when the developers have taken away that actual real benefit of what we're collecting, right? We still do it anyway because we're accustomed to doing it, right? And it takes a lot of repetition to figure out, hey, wait a minute, I'm getting all these experience points just to increase the counter, right? I'm not getting anything out of this other than I'm increasing a counter. Why am I doing this? And that's when at least I stop playing.
When you stop playing?
Disgaea.
Disgaea. Yeah.
And it's almost getting to that point with Demon's Souls, actually.
But not quite yet.
Almost. Okay. Well, I haven't finished the game yet, right? But really,
we haven't heard an update on that in a while. I wonder if you've gotten past World 1.
No, got past World 1. Actually, I'm probably about 4/5 through the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so number one is putting you in the Skinner box, which just means putting you in a situation where all of these things we're discussing could apply. And you've kind of moved on to number four as well already, creating the virtual food pellets for you to eat, which is the potential to get all of these things, which
all of these items are actually related, even though he lays them out in a linear fashion.
Yes, of course. I just want to make sure we list them all off for people. So, obviously, breaks here. We'll be right back to talk more about this.
And we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio, and we're talking about how video games are sucking the souls right out of you.
Specifically MMOs, but many other games as well. So this is the sort of academic discussion that I would urge you to have with a professor if you were going to the University of Advanced Technology,
indeed,
which you can learn about at uat.edu. So number four was creating these virtual pellets, which is the items in the game that might drop. I'm going to skip past that. Number three goes on to, and I mean, you're absolutely right, these don't have to be broken up into five parts, but they're all important points to think about.
Sure.
So number three is making you press the lever, and we discussed this earlier. How do you make the rat press the lever? And you don't do it by giving him pellets. He'll stop because he knows it's coming. So if I know that I can go get some magical sword by beating up that guy, or like another sword, or let's just say gold. That's an easier thing to wrap our heads around. If I know that I can get an extra 10 gold by beating that guy up over there, and I don't need that gold right away, I won't go beat him up. But if I think that I'm only going to get gold randomly, or if I know that it's not going to happen every time, I'm going to want to beat up everyone that I come across,
or if you
in
get,
case he's the one that's carrying the gold.
If, like, once 3 weeks ago you hit a super-duper jackpot, right, and you got, like, millions of items out of it for some reason, right? I mean, this is the reason why some people are predisposed to compulsively gamble.
Yeah.
Same type of thing.
It's very analogous. So making you press the lever or making you take an action is by not giving you a predictable result. They do that. And that's through, you know, random drops and things. And there's actually one really interesting thing I wanted to mention just regarding virtual items. This isn't necessarily relevant to our conversation, but it's hilarious to me, especially because, as I mentioned last week, I got engaged recently, and just a couple days ago, we took in...
And not just by this article.
No, I'm not engaged by this. So I'm engaged to an actual human girl, and so I had to buy a very expensive ring in order to make this tradition work, which bothered me greatly, but, you know, when you kids get older, you'll realize that you have to do some things just because. Anyway... So
really?
I buy this expensive ring, and we had to get it sized down a little bit, because you never buy it at the size that she actually is, unless she happens to be the standard size. And, she's smaller than the standard size on her ring finger, so I got it shrunk. And I picked it up today, and I've got it right here, and I showed it to you before the show started. So I have a diamond right here in the studio. Nobody mugged me after the show. And this guy makes the point of saying, you know, we treat these virtual items as if they're real. At least our brain does subconsciously. And so we have the same sort of care or effort to get these things as we might in the real world, meaning we're willing to take an action to get them, even if it's a mundane action.
Right.
And he says, you know, some people might think you're crazy for doing this. What, you spend all that time just to get the crazy sword in the crazy game? And he said, these people are dumb, because after all, you pay thousands of dollars, real, for diamonds, even though they're just diamonds and they do nothing but look pretty. And this is the real world, an actual diamond. Pay a bunch of money for it and it does nothing but look pretty. Nothing at all. Unless you punch someone and you put a little divot in their face, which won't happen. It's useless.
Can be accomplished more cheaply as well.
Yes. Completely useless. However, He said, this is just quoted from the article, a video game suit of armor both looks pretty and protects you from video game orcs. So it has a greater value.
Much greater.
Much greater value than an actual diamond in the real world, because it does two things. Like the Axe commercials. Is that right? The Axe commercials or the I Am Two Things?
That's some other thing.
Anyway, I just thought that was really funny.
Yeah, but both of those commercials are annoying.
So then we talked about number three, which is the urge to make you press the thing. And he brings up the point of this Chinese MMO called ZT Online, which does something very clever. It has a bunch of treasure chests throughout the game. And you open these treasure chests with keys. And the only way to obtain these keys, at least according to the article, I don't know if it's the only way, but you get these keys simply by purchasing them with real-world money. You get these virtual keys, and then you open up these chests, and you get stuff, like a virtual slot machine, right? It could randomize, right?
Yeah, that's basically what it amounts to.
It could be empty, or you could get something. It's the same thing as, you know, walking by a bad guy and killing him, and it drops. This way, you buy the key, and you open the chest. But it could be empty, so you're not guaranteed something. And then they take it a step further, and they say whoever, over the course of this day, every day, the person who opens the most chests, so the person who does the thing that gives us the most money real life.
Just open. It has nothing, no impact on whether you actually obtain something from the chest or not.
Yes, or if you had to do something difficult to get to the chest. So the person who opens the most chests gets something.
Something highly coveted.
Yeah, not a simple thing, right? You're actually guaranteed, if you're the person who opens the most chests, you're guaranteed something special.
Right. Which is, I think, is totally insidious. You know, I know last week we were talking about it after the show, and you didn't think it was as insidious as I did, but...
I thought it was very similar to what casinos do, and, I mean, he says in the article, even casinos haven't done this, and you convinced me that it is a little bit different. But they have players' cards, right? You go, and whoever, as you play, you get incentives, right? Free hotel rooms or meals or whatever, but you're not competing against this unknown mass where you could spend $5,000 on chests, but you might have some other idiot who spends $5,005 on chests that day, and you get screwed out of all that money. Whereas at a casino, you're guaranteed, if you're a high roller, you're going to get something.
Right. But by it's interesting. By hiding information from you, they make people compete more severely because they're competing against this unknown entity, right? Like, if you're collecting chests and opening them in that game, okay, I don't know if I'm number one by 50 chests, or I don't know if there's 10 people who are right around how much I have, or I don't know if I don't have a shot at all because, you know, the people who are winning them are running bots to buy chests or something like that.
Yeah, so we're getting to the point that I really wanted to discuss, something of a reduction of action for, I guess, to make a point, right? So we've reduced this to from fighting enemies and grinding. And in a traditional MMO, you grind, you grind, you grind, you up a level, you grind, and then eventually you can do something bigger, and you're still just doing these mundane tasks, which don't require much skill.
We can really just call all of these things grinding, just for conversation's sake.
And so in the article, he says, you know, can you just picture this woman here who wants to win this daily special thing, and she just clicks the same animation, chest after chest after chest after chest after chest. And this is a great example. Like, they've taken the game away. Actually opening the chest is not fun, right? There's nothing interesting about that, especially after maybe you've done it the first time and the animation for the chest is interesting.
Right.
But after that, you're done.
It's all an activity to gain an end, and the activity in and of itself, like, I'll go even further, right? And I'll say, not only is it not fun, not only is it not engaging, right, but you don't get anything out of it either, other than, you know, maybe the rare item, right? But the larger issue here, and I think that this is, you know, one of the things that John Blow is referring to when he talks about these types of mechanics as being immoral, is that, you know, what do you gain from playing a video game? What I think video games are best at doing is to actually teach the player something. Now, they can teach a lot of different things depending on what the game is, right? You can improve your hand-eye coordination at something, you know? Okay, maybe that skill doesn't necessarily translate as well to other activities, right? But you can do things that engage your brain, you know? You can actually, you know, you can learn things, okay? You can, You know, even if you, you know, playing something like, you know, DDR or Guitar Hero, like one of those games, you know, your brain develops when you're doing those kinds of activities. You're gaining something, as unobvious as it may seem at the time, by actually performing, practicing, and improving.
Yeah,
you know, this is the same kind of process, right, that you go through when people train for sports or for musical performances. These are the exact same types of things. That, to me, this is the true potential of video games. It's incredible what potential is there, and it's almost like we're saying all of that, we're just going to ignore all that, right, and just give you this ridiculous process that you're going to perform ad nauseum to get something, and in the end, it's, you know, your brain doesn't develop, you don't learn anything, you're not better.
So let me encapsulate what you just said in a single sentence that's mentioned in this article. Humans play games because there's a basic satisfaction in mastering a skill, even if it's a pointless one in terms of your overall life goals. Then he goes on to say, helps us to develop our brains, especially for children, to test ourselves with out serious consequences if there were, you know, if there was failure. That's why our brains reward us with the sensation we call fun when we do it. And so when you reduce this action to something so simple as just clicking the mouse, unless you're you know, a mentally or physically handicapped person who needs practice actually clicking a mouse, it's not doing anything for you. And this is another one of those topics I wish we had much more time for. And
so we're running up to the end. I want to make an announcement, though, for next week. We're going to have Tyrone Rodriguez, the producer of Cave Story, from Nicholas, on. And we're going to do a little thing. If you have a question for the original developer, Daisuke Amaya, also known as Pixel, send us an email. We'll have him read it and actually give you an answer. And in a future show, we'll actually give you the translated answer in English on the air. So give us an email.
This is for Cave Story, actually be released soon,
which is coming out at the end of March.
For really, really reals.
For reals. So if you like Daisuke Amaya or Pixel, you want to ask him a question, give us an email, and we'll give you his answer.
All right. And as always, we'll be back next week at our new time, everyone, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight, you know, that other one, Eastern.
Sure. Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.